Welcome to the Art of the Punt. I'm Roger Aldridge. Usually the man sitting in this chair, he's now sitting in that chair because Brent Sarafa, not only are you a very knowledgeable interviewer, you're also a very knowledgeable form man and a good punter. So welcome to the Art of the Punt, your show essentially. And we're here to find out exactly how you win on the punt. But before we get to that, what got you into racing to start with?
I'd have to say my father. He's always been a horse owner and a punter before I was born. So I grew up in Sydney on acreage. Dad had horses in the backyard, but I never really had a significant love for it from a real early age, but remembered going to the races consistently growing up. Then as I started to get into my sort of teenage years, used to go to the races with Dad, would go to the tab with Dad, watching the races and just sort of being around it by that sort of grew my interest. And then one thing led to another and sort of happened to stumble into working into the racing game. But yeah, I would have to put it down to my father, Ray, as the reason why I'm sort of enjoying racing and having a bet.
So did you fall in love with racing or did you fall in love with punting? What came first?
I'd have to say it was probably racing to start with, because you know, when you're a young early teens going to the races, the actual animal of a horse is quite exciting, and being around that, spending many Thursday nights going to Penrith trots, spending Friday nights going to Harold Park trots, and just getting caught up by the characters and the colors and the noise and the atmosphere of that was quite exciting. And then you know, you sit there and you're having your $2 quinillas and your $2 exactas and watching Dad have a bet and having a win, having a loss, all that then sort of developed from that. But it certainly was for me, looking back, yeah, going to the races was exciting as a kid.
And you're like me, you're a journalist, first and foremost. And so when you got into the journalism side of things, was it that were you a journalist that covered other things and then got into the racing side of it? Or it was always about being a racing reporter?
Well, I was studying communications at university and I needed to get work experience to continue, as part of my study. And one thing led to another. A good family friend of ours was working at the Sportsman in Sydney at the time. And I was booked to do a week work experience with him at the Sportsman. And I was actually booked to do a week work experience at 2KY, the old Sky Radio. And I went for my week work experience at the Sportsman, and that was when I was sort of 18, 19, first year of university, and I was so excited by going into the Sportsman office. They were owned by News Limited, so you're in with the Telegraph, Sunday Telegraph, the Australian. They had a big racing department at that stage, and it was heavily staffed. We're talking, 15 to 20 staff.
It's a bygone era.
Yeah, just working on the form guide production alone, and I sort of was like, well, this is what I want to do for a job, and I actually don't mind racing, and I know a little bit about this. I wouldn't say I was, an expert or anything at that stage. And one thing led to another, and at the end of the week, the editor, Paul Mikuloff, who was, a good friend of ours, good family friend of ours, said, what are you doing next week? And I said, I'm actually going to 2KY to do some work experience. He said, I'll tell them you're not coming in, come back here for another week. So I did that and ended up doing 2 weeks. And then at the end of my 2 weeks, the team there said, look, anytime you've got any holidays, anytime you want to get involved, come back and you can come and work in, do whatever you want to do and just be a part of the team. And so I did that for probably 8 to 10 weeks across different periods of my university break over summer.
Did they pay you for it?
No, that was unpaid work.
That's why they wanted you back.
No, but at the time, we're talking 2005, at that stage, this was pre, the internet really blowing up and the digital sort of side of media really exploding. You had to get some work experience and it was a great opportunity for me to learn. And then at the end of the summer holidays, the racing services manager, so that even tells you how much they were putting into racing at that time, offered me a cadetship and said, look, we've got a cadetship available, but you won't happen to do police rounds, you won't do courts, you won't do news. We want you as a cadet here just purely on racing.
Wow.
So I had a chat with my family, mum and dad, and basically decided that I wouldn't go back to university and I'd start a cadetship. And a cadetship at News Limited was 2 years. I had to do shorthand, had to do their training program. So I was learning on the job, but I was getting to learn on the job while working with the form guide production team and then sort of moving on from there.
And so was that where your education in terms of form really came to the fore? Because, you know, you can be a racing journalist and write great feature stories,
yep,
or, you know, articles about, say, horses getting injured or whatever, but you're a very astute form analyst. Is that where it started?
Basically, yeah. So, like, I was trying to do both, and I have done both in terms of I was excited by writing news and was working with Ray Thomas, who was a great help to me, guys like Christian Nicolussi, Dave Riccio, Neil Breen was a Sunday Telly editor at the time, you know, working with all those guys and learning from them, all the guys on the Daily Telegraph news desk and, you know, Andrew Webster and Phil Rothfield, all those guys I was sort of working with.
That's a who's who of
Yeah, and underneath at that stage. So I was trying to pick their brains and take as much out of it as I could. But then on the other side of that, I was also working on the form guide production, and it is a relatively basic understanding of form at that stage. But, you know, my initial jobs were typing the weights in, typing the prices in, because that was all done manually at that stage, updating scratchings, updating results, typing results into the newspaper, the columns where you see in the SP panels. I was doing all that sort of stuff, but it was a great way of just, you know, watching a lot of racing, watching tapes and continually trying to sort of understand what worked, what didn't. And, you know, wagering and form analysis for me hasn't been something that I've done professionally. I've always had a job and the backup of a job, but that was where sort of I cut my teeth and had the opportunity to learn.
And so you went from the print media, yep, to the electronic media, CBN and yep, obviously now with racing.com. Have you been in the form game all the way through? Is that sort of, it started there and it got bigger and bigger as you
Yeah, it's
on?
Just, I've built the blocks from there, and it's something that I'm passionate about and I really enjoy and I love. And so even if I was on the news side of the fence, I was always doing my own betting and doing my own form analysis sort of in the background. And things have developed since now I've been here at racing.com and have the opportunity to basically be on that form analysis side full time through a number of different shows. Like Get On's been a great outlet for me for basically the past decade, really, and working with some really experienced TV people like Jason Richardson and getting to learn that side of things, but then also working alongside Hutchie and the likes that have been on Get On and to the team that we've got now and have a lot of fun doing it. And yes, it's entertainment, but we also are out there to try and continuing to improve and continuing to find as many winners as possible we can for the audience and myself as well.
We are going to get to your system very, very shortly, but do you feel the pressure when you're trying to tip on television? Because people do follow your tips, and, you know, does it feel like a job to you, or is it because it's something you love? You know, they always say that if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Do you feel that, or do you just feel the pressure can sometimes get the best of you?
No, it's with experience. I think you have less pressure. Maybe early on I was a little nervous, not nervous, but you do second guess yourself if you sort of haven't tipped a winner, or there's always feedback, especially these days with social media.
Oh, there's always feedback.
People are quick to remind you if you haven't tipped a winner or whether you're doing something wrong or whether you've sort of made a mistake. And look, that's all part of the game. But I wouldn't say that I'm nervous or sort of feel the pressure as such now, because I'm confident in sort of my ability. And if I'm lucky that I've got a job doing what I do, and if others feel that I'm sort of not up to doing that job, that's not my decision to make. I would happily sort of move on if I had to got told it was, you know, there was someone else that was going to be replacing me in that position. That's just the way it is. But no, I love it. Like I'm lucky to have the job that I do have, and I don't feel the pressure at this stage now.
All right, up next we're going to find out exactly how BZ finds a winner. Back here on The Art of the Punt, our Picasso of the punt is Brent Zarafa, who's usually in this chair. This time we've got him in that chair. BZ, tell us exactly how you do your form. Is it a matter of going through race replays, or I've got to be honest. Yeah. You're more a trial man.
Yeah, I love. Look, I think you've got to try and find what your niche is. And over time, everyone loves betting on the metros and betting on a Saturday afternoon and, you know, betting at Flemington and Caulfield. And those races are exciting, and that's where the good horses and jockeys are at. But over time, as I've continued to develop my own sort of thoughts on the game, the best opportunities for a person like myself and for probably like a lot of people, I feel, is betting away from the main meetings. I love the country Victorian meetings. So yes, on a Saturday, I might be working on racing.com and doing tips for Get On and everything like that, which I am. But a lot of the time, my main focus from a betting perspective is on the meeting at Wangaratta or the meeting at Echuca, because there's lower grade horses, which can then sort of find more opportunity if you're willing to put in the work. And like, I can't compete with the big professional teams. I don't have that ability. I don't have the database knowledge that they do have, but I can watch videos, I can watch trials, I can assess horses who are in maiden grade. And, you know, there's plenty of tools out there. Punting form is a great one that I like to use, which provides, you know, sexual analysis and benchmark analysis on horses, which gives you an understanding of the strength of, you know, certain maidens versus other maidens. And for me, that's where I really sort of like to sink the teeth into and have a bet.
And this is something that the punters at home can use as well. This is information that's available to everyone, which, and we were speaking about when you started out at the Daily Tally, and that, this sort of stuff wasn't around then, but now trials are there, race replays are there, it's at everyone's fingertips. So what do you actually look for when you're watching a trial?
Oh, look, it's very subjective. Like, there's, I could look at a trial and you could look at a trial, and there's no right or wrong answer to say that is the right thing to look at and whether what I'm looking at is wrong and what you're looking at is wrong. It all matters about what you're then trying to find. And when I'm looking at replays, you know, you're looking for unlucky runs generally, because the good runs most people can see. So if you're looking at a horse that was winning by 4 or 5 lengths and was impressive, okay, yeah, but the market's going to find that next time out. So you're trying to find things that most people aren't then necessarily looking for. But in trials, which I do, I would say, the majority of my video analysis with, like, plenty of good trialers actually then start okay prices. So race day, I'm more looking for horses who are unlucky. But in trials, you're just looking for horses that move well, horses that sort of going through their sort of their motion and their gears without being placed under too much pressure. But then each stable has sort of different idiosyncrasies and how they train their horses, whether they sort of run them along. So it's about being disciplined in continuing to watch things, trying not to cut corners. I keep a database on all the trials. I try to watch the jump outs in Victoria basically every day. I make notes on the horses that I want to follow at their next start, put them into a black book, get my notifications when they are racing. And it's not just about then auto backing them when they do go around, but just trying to continue to build a profile on the horses in the pool that I like to bet in, and trying to know as much about them all as possible.
Do you find when you punt in the country that there's other things you can take? Like, for instance, when you go to the city, everyone's coming into the one spot.
Yeah.
Do you look at, say, Wangaratta and try and back your Wangaratta-based trainers, Hamilton, a Hamilton-based trainer?
Not particularly. Sometimes the locals can be hard to beat, but I love nothing more than finding like a Mick Price-trained horse that goes up to Echuca and has trialed well. And I believe, you know, in my subjective assessment, that this might be a city horse. And you've got a city horse having its debut in the country. You can have bad luck, you can have a bad barrier, you can have track bias, but the horse can still overcome that because it is just better than its opposition. So, and a lot of time that's factored into the market, but I still think there is a slight edge there's more mistakes in those markets than there would be if that horse was going to Sandown on a Wednesday or to Moonee Valley on a Friday night or happened to debut in town. You might see a horse who, yeah, it might be a group horse, but the markets identify them more in the metro region than they do in the country and provincial areas.
And there are those stables, like you say, Mick Price, Peter Moody's another one who likes to send them to the bush to have an easy kill. What about a jockey? If you see Jamie Carr's going to Warwick Nabil for one ride, is that something you look at?
It's something that you can pay attention to, but again, the market generally finds that. So look, it's not the be-all and end-all. you don't mind it when Damien Lane pops up on three horses at Geelong on a Friday afternoon. It can be, you know, advantageous, but it can also be very well found by the betting market, which doesn't necessarily mean that there's a value in that current price.
What about when to bet? That, and I would imagine that with the country meets, that potentially you're waiting for the market to go up. You've yep. identified your horse, and as soon as the market goes up, that's when to pounce rather than on a Saturday morning or just before the jump, as opposed to what yep. some people bet in the city like that?
My thought there is you're either going to have to bet first or bet last. If you're trying to sort of predict where the market is going to go in the middle, you can get yourself caught up. But if you want to be on a horse and you think it's going to be a mistake when the market opens, generally there's other people out there that are going to have a similar opinion, and you can't think that you're the only one that's going to have that opinion. So if you can get in first, which is not easy these days because there's, you know, there's different forms of robotics that are sending off markets straight away. And yeah, there's there might be a lot of people looking at those markets, but there's enough where if the price goes up and it's wrong, it will be corrected quite quickly. But if you don't get that first market, first price, the late market can sometimes get back out, especially with sort of like first starters or horses first up off long breaks. They can get back out because the market may overreact. And then as you get closer to the jump, with a first starter, you know, some of the big professional teams mightn't have as much data on them, so they might take a set against it and it gets out to a similar price, which it happens very often or not. So I'm either in trying to get in there early, but if I don't get in there early, you just try and not be too perturbed by that, and you might get another opportunity to get in late.
What about staking? Because that's something when we speak to people who are either professional punters or yeah. expert yeah. tipsters, staking plan. I wish I was good at a staking yeah. plan, because on a Saturday Saturday yeah. afternoon, I'm not great at staking, especially after yeah. a couple of beers. Is that something that you think is key?
And it is, and I'm continuing to improve that. I wouldn't say I'm an expert at staking at all, and it's something that you're continuing to learn on. I've tried sort of different methods. I don't like locking myself into sort of a certain staking plan. I bet a lot more off feel and sort of like I have a confidence level in my ratings with my trials, and the higher rating in them, the bigger the sort of bet I'll have. And I'm not afraid to sort of have a crack at one that might be a bigger price because there might be an opportunity for that. But now it is trying to stay, I'm more important about sort of bank management and trying to stay in the game than necessarily sort of staking, because I don't bet to a certain percentage of, you know, of a win. From a price, I can sort of attack on certain horses that I like and try and continue to develop it from there.
Are there any tracks that you steer clear of?
No, not particularly. I think it's more just horses for courses. So, like, if it's a horse that I think is going to settle back, I won't sort of back it at Horsham. But if there's a horse that I know is going to be sort of off me field and hitting the line, if they turn up at a track like Ballarat or Geelong, you know, but it's more understanding the individual horse and the individual scenario as to where they're going to be. And I think that comes back then to knowing your subject. If you're sort of narrowing in on Country Victoria, you can form a strong opinion on certain tracks that are ideal or certain horses that are ideal, rather than, I very rarely bet in New South Wales, Queensland or other states, purely because I don't have enough time to do the form in those areas. And then therefore my knowledge of those scenarios, track conditions, etc., is a lot less than it is in Victoria.
That's something Dr. Turf says, that you can't spread yourself too yeah. thin. You've got to know your jurisdiction and potentially stick to one. So for you, it's regional Victoria and a bit of a look at metropolitan
yeah,
Melbourne.
Victoria alone, like there could be up to 10 to 12 meetings in Victoria a week, which is a lot of analysis for if you're doing it on your own. I would look at most race meetings per day. Doesn't mean I'm betting in them every day, but because I'm looking at the trials, horses can pop up everywhere. They could go to Bairnsdale, they could end up at Warrnambool, they could end up at Mildura, then they could also end up in town. So you are sort of going through them, and then with my work with racing.com, I'm looking at the metros and playing in the metros as well. But I don't have the time to look outside of that. Very rarely would I properly look at a horse race in New South Wales. And like, I grew up in Sydney, that was where I initially would, you know, always do my form. But now that I'm here in Victoria, I find it very hard to, like, if you said to me, oh, here's a race at you know, Warwick Farm on a Wednesday, I'd look at the form guide and probably wouldn't know most of the horses.
This is The Other Punt with Brent Zarafa. We're going to be back shortly to find out exactly how much time he puts into it. The Art of the Punt, Brent Zarafa is our artist here today. Usually he's sitting in this chair. BZ, your job is obviously to watch a lot of videos and give out tips to punters. How much is it for work and how much is it for your own personal, or is it just a matter of a crossover?
It's very blended at the moment. Look, it's time consuming and but it's enjoyable. Like, I love it. So to be able to get the opportunity to do it for work, I'm happy to put in the time. So my schedule, for Get on a Thursday night, but I might be working Wednesday at Sandown, so I'm getting up 6:30, checking scratchings from 7 o'clock, completing scratchings from 7:30, updating information for the racing.com website and app from, you know, by 8 o'clock, because we have deadlines for our information that we need to provide. Then I'm going to the races. I'm at the races working Wednesday. I get home, have dinner. Then it's basically from 6:30 till 11 o'clock at night. I'm usually then looking at the Saturday meeting. So you're probably putting 4 or 5 hours in on a Wednesday night after being at the races during the day. Then you're getting up Thursday morning, going over your thoughts, sending through your selections, because, you know, we have production meetings and teams that need to have all our details so they can build graphics. So there's a time constraint on that part of it. And then we film Get On as a record, generally at like midday or 1 o'clock on a Thursday, and then it goes to air Thursday night. So I'm putting a lot of effort into just getting to that. But then I'm usually working on a Friday, or I could have a second Saturday meeting I need to do. So then it's more form, more analysis. So, you know, Sundays, you generally like to try and sort of carve out as a day off.
Yeah.
Mondays sometimes, but even still, I'm
probably watching the races.
I'm checking in results, you're watching races. Yeah. Very rarely would you completely have, unless you're going on a holiday, where you get an opportunity to completely sort of get out of it and remove from it. But, you know, I don't know how many hours you could spend a week on it, but it's certainly enough.
I'm guessing when you close your eyes at night, all you see is horses.
Yeah, but there's plenty of form and videos going through, that's for sure.
How disciplined have you got to be? Because when you're working in the industry, it'd be very easy to just go, oh, I'll just have a couple of bucks here, a couple of bucks
and
there.
And then, like, I've been guilty of not being disciplined over the years. You know, it's easy to sort of fall on that wrong side and get caught up in it, because just the mental approach can get to you sometimes, and you're not going through your procedures. So I'm certainly not saying I'm any expert in discipline and haven't been through the years, but you're just trying to continue to improve and evolve yourself and get better as you go through.
Every punter, whether they're professional or just once a year Melbourne Cup punter, knows their biggest win.
Yeah.
What was yours?
My biggest win was actually a quaddy I had in New South Wales. This was probably going back 15 years, and I liked a horse at big odds, and I was keen to back it, which I did. And then I took it sort of one out in a quaddie, and I'd taken some quaddie numbers earlier, actually the night before, and then happened to wake up the next day, and one of the horses that I had in the quaddie was scratched, but I sort of went to the races and didn't realise it. And then I thought I'd been knocked out of the second leg of the quaddie because the sub had won, but I'd then had the sub because I'd taken the quaddie the night before. I then proceeded to back the roughy again that I wanted to be on. Got the roughy happened to win. It was a 20-1 pop. And then I checked the count. So it was sort of more by luck than by design. I was keen to make a horse a result, but then I happened to get the quaddie a few times that I wasn't expecting, so that happened to be a very healthy dividend.
Oh, surprise winner. They're the best ones.
Yes, exactly.
This has been The Art of the Punt. I'm Roger Aldridge. He's Brent Zarafa, and hopefully you are leaving this with a better idea of how to find a winner.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.